we get the incredible story of fallen angels, the battle, the good, the evil. And I find that to be fascinating, John.
Well, the there's a lot of theories about that. Probably the most popular one is that, you know, at the beginning of time, there was a war in heaven between God and his viceroy, Lucifer, and Lucifer's sin in this particular version of events was arrogance. He wanted to take God's place, and in traditional thought, one-third of the angels rebelled. That comes from a line in the book of Revelation where there's a passage that says the dragon's tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven with it, the dragon symbolizing the devil. And so that's one idea, that there was a war in heaven and eventually Lucifer was thrown out. This particular viewpoint was made popular by John Milton's long poem, Paradise Lost, where he goes into extensive detail, you know, in his imaginative poem about it. And then another major theory that was very popular in ancient times has become less so in medieval and modern times was that angels fell not because of pride or arrogance, but because of lust. This comes from a little snippet in the book of Genesis, fifth chapter, I think, beginning part of the fifth chapter, where there's a vague reference to the sons of heaven coming down, sons of heaven coming down to mate with the daughters of men. And that's about all it says. But a whole vast reservoir of literature grew up around that in ancient times, including various what the scholars like to call pseudo-epigraphic writings. And what that means is a writer would produce a scroll or a manuscript, and then he would falsely attribute that to some important figure in order to get respect for the manuscript or credibility for it. The Book of Enoch would be a good example of that. You know, was clearly not written by Enoch, but by a writer that took his name. So, in this particular in the Book of Enoch, for example, you had lustful angels that come down from heaven, and when they pair up with the mortal women, the women give birth to a race of huge, ferocious giants that terrorize the earth. God gets upset in this mythological scenario, gets upset and sends the flood to wipe all the giants out. And so that's another example of it. I think now in modern times, there's been more subtle thinking about fallen angels. In a near-death experience, for example, you have people who, on the way to the light, have glimpsed the dark zone around the earth. This is what kind of links up with what the spiritualists were saying in the 19th century. They might see morose, sullen, shell-shocked spirits that are clinging to life and are unable to ascend to the light because of various problems they've got, or attachments or addictions to the physical world. There was one, George Ritchie was a near-death experiencer back in the 1940s as a young man. He left his body in a military hospital. I think he was having a bout with some sort of illness, might have been pneumonia. Mm-hmm. I don't recall at the moment, but he left his body. He had one of the most elaborate near-death experiences on record. And he went, apparently he was able to retrace his astral wanderings later on by car, physically, when he got back in his body. And apparently he had stopped at some kind of a tavern when he was in astral form and had noticed spirits hanging around outside the tavern trying to vicariously enjoy the drinking that was going on inside. So there are various reasons, you know, why these spirits cling to life. There is also the question of malevolent forces, you know, demonic forces and such. This can be a problem when you're having a metaphysical experience. So very often the question arises, you know, how do I know that I'm being guided by the light or by a darker force? And the New Testament writers called this particular difficulty, I guess their term for it was discerning the spirits. In other words, what you would do is consider the consequences of listening to this particular advice, and also the effect it has on you. is this spiritual guidance or this guidance from outside of you? Is it raising your consciousness or lowering it? Is it having a positive effect upon you or a negative effect upon you? Is it having a positive effect on those around you and your environment, or the opposite? So those are just some ideas concerning fallen angels.
How did the angels get their names? How did that happen?
Well, the word angel itself comes from angelos in Greek, which originally just meant messenger, any kind of messenger. It could be a spiritual messenger, could be a human messenger, and it replaced a Hebrew term, malach, which had been... The reason for that was in the circa 200 B.C., if I remember correctly, the ancient Jewish people had a problem. Their language, Hebrew, was beginning to die out. And at that point, the Old Testament was translated into Greek and was referred to as the Septuagint, which is a Greek term meaning 70, because in the legend or the myth, there were supposedly 70 scholars at Alexandria working on the Septuagint, translating it, and miraculously, according to the legend, all 70 of them came up, working separately, came up with the same translation. I'm a little skeptical about that, but it could be true. And that's how the name stuck. Well, anyway, when the Jewish scholars were translating from Hebrew to Greek, they had a problem. What were they going to use? What kind of Greek word were they going to use to convey the Hebrew word malach, which had been used for angel? And they had two candidates. They had daimon, and they had angelos. And daimon was kind of they eventually chose angelos, which just meant any kind of a messenger, human messenger or whatever, in this case, God's messenger. They chose that over malach. They chose it over daimon. And the reason they did was because daimon was kind of a vague term. A daimon could be an evil spirit as well as a good spirit. It could act to help you or to hurt you. The most famous daimon in history was Socrates' daimon, the ancient Greek philosopher. He felt he was in touch with that guardian spirit or that godling. In the ancient Greek mythology, a daimon was actually like a minor god, and there were thousands upon thousands of these minor godlings. And a daimon could attach itself to you, and if you were a righteous person, made the right decisions, did the right thing, the daimon would help you. But if you chose the wrong path, the daimon would begin causing you problems. It's a little bit like Santa Claus giving you a present or a lump of coal, depending on whether you've been good or bad.